Hey, Tad Pals, we're back. Rainy day, sitting in the studio. I've got PJ next to me and producer Jorge. We had an exciting midweek. Some Champions League action we're definitely going to get into in one of the topics. Let's start with reviews. Let's knock that out. Thanks again, guys, for the reviews. Keep them coming. Drop a review and also include the player that either current or former you'd love to play with. And before I get to the review, saw a picture. LA Galaxy had a player show up, former player, a little guest appearance by what I think some say is the greatest player of all time. Some make that argument. Mm-hmm. And this guy, the real Ronaldo.
If the injuries hadn't happened, he would definitely be right there.
So good. The Brazilian Ronaldo showed up. LA Galaxy went to the training field, traded jerseys with Zlatan, big Zlatan. Man, would have been fun to play with that guy. I remember asking Alessandro Nesta when I was covering MLS. We interviewed him before one game, and I said, who's the player you've played against where you just said, this guy's the best. This is the best there is. I mean, it's impossible. And he said, Ronaldo, the real one. That's so funny. He had to put that in at the end. Ronaldo,
everybody likes to say the real one, yeah. And Nesta's played against Messi and probably Cristiano. Yeah, he's definitely played against Messi.
So, I mean, that's high praise, especially for a defender that has to deal with these guys and face them. But in this review, the review soccer, and it's from Cabrian, and it says, I'm new to watching soccer. I like the reviews. A lot of reviews, I hear that. I'm new to watching soccer, having not played or watched my whole life. Well, welcome. You're gonna love being a part of this group. And he said, I love Kyle's passion for the game. As far as players I'd like to play with, I'd have to go with Mo Salah. What a great talent. Well, that's an understatement, because Mo Salah, holy cow, we're definitely going to get into that. We're going to talk the topics today. We're going to go Spurs. I mean, that's going to be one of the only negative areas. Knocked out of FA Cup semifinals by Manchester United. We'll get into that a little bit. What does that mean for Pochettino and this project? The second topic, we're going to get into Liverpool. Mo Salah's incredible performance. They seem poised to be headed to a Champions League final. Incredible night at Anfield for them and their fans. And then first, we got to start with the big news, Arsene Wenger. He is done as Arsenal manager. He's going to finish up the season. He had one more year left on his contract, and there was a lot of discussion about what would happen this summer. What would they decide? Would the board step up? What would Stan Kroenke do? What would Arsene Wenger decide? We've been having that debate. I feel like we've been having this debate for like the last three seasons, but it's really come to a crescendo and reached a tipping point based on performance on the field, frustration amongst Arsenal fans. They stopped showing up at the stadium. I mean, it really was reaching this moment where there was a powder keg and something was going to happen. Something was going to explode. Now, big news, and everyone woke up to it. And, you know, Twitter was on fire, social media, everyone jumping in and responding to the not surprising news, but the news that Arsene Wenger would be coaching his last season. I mean, two decades at Arsenal, and this is the home stretch, the last he'll be sitting on that Arsenal bench overseeing this group. And the overwhelming response, as it should be, was what a manager. I mean, what a run, what a time at Arsenal Football Club. And even taking that a step further and saying this person has not only changed Arsenal Football Club for the better and been a part of one of the most successful eras, but also the Premier League, forever changing the way that the game is played, the way that players train. I was listening to the two Robbies and hearing Robbie Earl say it, even though it wasn't his coach, it changed the way he trained and he ate differently, you know, slept differently, took care of himself, focused on the sports science a little bit more. I mean, that was at that time. I mean, it was revolutionary for sure. I mean, it was kind of a eat what you want, drink what you want, physical, direct, and not necessarily in a pejorative way. I mean, it's just, you know, England, if you were going to be stereotypical about the style and the style in the field and lifestyle off of it, I mean, Arsene Wenger was counterculture to that. I mean, juxtaposed to that was this, you know, the professor, this intellectual who was a relative unknown when he came in. I mean, what was it, Arsene who? I remember all the, you know, the headlines right when he got there. And no one could have guessed he would go on to be one of the most successful managers in Premier League history and alter the league forever.
I was going to say, Lee Dixon, I believe, called him the geography teacher when he first saw him come in. And, you know, Tony Adams had some quotes, too, I think, calling him, I forget if he called him a nerd or something like that. But they all just wonder, like you said, who is this guy? Who is this geek sort of coming in to take over the team? And those guys had success already in the past.
Yeah, that's the hard part, too, is you forget.
And he still changed the way that they played and everything. And like, you know, like you just said, off the field, too. I mean, Lee's talked about it a lot. They're, you know, England, and you can ask Steve Nicol too, from Liverpool, there's a drinking culture during those days, and he eliminated that from Arsenal, and other teams and other players followed suit, like Robbie Earle was mentioning. And I'm curious for you as a player, if that type of thing would come back even while you're playing over here in the U.S., or if you start reading these stories or anything like that, if it had an effect, you think, even outside of England, or if you think it was mainly just in England?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think for us over here, you know, I'm a little bit behind Earl and Musto in the fact that my professional career started after that paradigm shift. So I didn't notice it as much because I wasn't, I mean, A, the American culture is different. So already out of the gate, there was a focus on sports science and nutrition and all that stuff. And not clinging to these historical precedent and this lifestyle that existed over there. I mean, that really wasn't a part of the soccer culture here. But what it did change for me is I followed a team closely for the first time. I mean, I wouldn't say I was an Arsenal fan, but that Invincibles team, I mean, Pires and you know, Bergkamp and Henri and Vieira, I mean, just the way they played and a lot of Arsenal players, everyone always asks me, are you a fan of a team? And my answer is always, no, I've never really been a fan of a team. I'm sort of a fan of players, and I follow players around. Like, I was a real big fan of Juventus during the Zidane years, during the Pirlo years, followed AC Milan because of Donadoni, and then, you know, again, when Boban was there. I mean, I sort of, like, an eye-catching player will have me follow a club closely, but not really be a supporter. But that was probably the one team that had the most players I was following. I mean, even Overmars and, you know, some of his teams that he had, Anelka and even Wiltord. I mean, some of what he did was he had this incredible eye for, I mean, that was value buying before anyone else realized it, right? We talk about, like, Mahrez and N'Golo Kanté and, you know, Leicester going and finding these diamonds in the rough and lower league in France. I mean, Arsene Wenger was doing that before you had, like, the digital scouting system of, like, a database of players and you could track them. I mean, he was the first one to go and pluck these players, and not necessarily from obscurity. You know, Thierry Henry from Juventus, it just wasn't materializing from there, and he noticed not only Thierry wasn't becoming the player he could be, but you know, could turn him into a different type of player, where he was, if you think about the 98 World Cup and with Juventus, he was sort of off the flank and he was pace and he was direct. And, you know, Arsene Wenger helped bring out what became one of the best duos in English soccer history of Thierry Henry and Bergkamp. But also Thierry Henry, people forget, led you know, the team in assists some seasons. And, you know, wasn't just a goal scorer, wasn't just pace, was just a complete player. And Thierry will tell you many managers helped him with that in his career. But, you know, Arsene Wenger just unlocked that team. And for the first time for me, just had an aesthetically pleasing side that competed for titles, that won trophies. He just did it in a different way. And like anything, created a bit of a fad where people saw that was possible. And, I mean, he really unlocked that, which someone like me who just loves the entertainment side of things and, you know, I go on and on about Pep and his side. I just love enjoying a team trying to entertain you and trying to play total football in an attacking-minded, irreverent way, but also winning things. And you know, I know the criticism will come from the second half of his tenure where, although there's FA Cups sprinkled in there, and that's very impressive, you know, just never really being truly in a title race, maybe because he was a bit stubborn and wasn't willing to continue to modernize and tweak some of his some of his style and, you know, spend big in the market and do the other things that other managers were doing to find success around him, some will say, listen, we credit him for that. You know, he's fiscally responsible and didn't throw our club into debt, didn't try to keep up with the Joneses by spending. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's going to have a statue outside of the Emirates, and, you know, he should be celebrated, and he will be celebrated as one of the best up there with Sir Alex Ferguson that English soccer's ever seen.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not that surprising we saw all these, this, you know, pouring of emotion come out of people, you know, giving him all this praise and everything. It's just that he could have done this. The question is always going to be, did he hang around too long? Because he could have done this last year. He could have done it 2 years ago. And all that that praise would have still come through. Yeah. So it's still, that is just the main question. Is it how much is that going to tarnish it? Are we going to look, as time goes on, are we going to kind of forget about that as much or focus more on the success? You know, is it sort of similar to maybe, this might not be the best analogy, but Michael Jordan going and playing for the Wizards, mm-hmm. where we know it happened, but we kind of ignore that it happened. We always still look back at him as the best player ever with what he did in Chicago. So is that what we'll look back with Wenger, you think, where we kind of
people will ignored? Forget it. Yeah, people will forget it. This won't tarnish his legacy. In the short term, it does. It makes it a bittersweet situation where today they are, tomorrow, Atletico Madrid have a big Europa League game. And, you know, if he gets knocked out of that competition, which, I mean, Atletico Madrid's the team that's probably going to do it, you know, he leaves with nothing and leaves after his worst ever season at Arsenal. I mean, that's tough. That stings a bit, but it won't tarnish it long term. He did stay too long, and that's not his fault for me. The decision shouldn't have been his, and it has been his. I think this decision should have been taken 3 seasons ago, honestly. I mean, I think that was the moment where it was clear, and I said it, and I went on air, and I said, listen, this is heading in the wrong direction. There's an inflection point, and now we're seeing diminishing returns from Arsene sticking around, and we've seen that. I mean, last season was the worst they've ever had, and this one's going to be worse than that. And that was avoidable. But the good thing is they've done the right things behind the scenes. Sven Mislintat and, you know, director of football they brought over from Barcelona has been there for 10 years. I mean, they have the infrastructure behind them to make the move. The big question is, as we're hitting the whistle and we're going to go extra time on this one, is who made this decision?
Yep.
I mean, that's the big – I think it's irrelevant. I mean, I don't really think it matters in the grand scheme of things, but was he fired? Was he sacked? Or did he say, you know what, I see it. I finally see what everyone else sees, that I'm not optimizing this club. Someone else needs to come in. There are great parts here. I'm leaving something that someone can take forward and take to another level. I think he was fired. I do. He tends to wait until the summer to make any decision. We've been here before, and he never makes any decision until the summer. So it's very unlike him to, if he did make this decision, make it now. And if he made the decision now, tell us. What's interesting is we're all speculating on how this happened behind the scenes. Now, I was waiting for some sort of idea from Gazidis or anyone, but no one was, I mean, they're holding their cards close. And they're not really letting us know what happened behind the scenes. But Arsene today, in an interview before the Europa League game, answered a question that got everyone a bit excited. Did he reveal what happened behind the scenes?
Other Germans wonder about why you're quitting, because your contract is running to 2019, and why are you quitting in this moment, just from such a big match?
The timing was not really my decision, and for the rest, I've spoken about it already.
So I woke up and Twitter was out of control about everyone saying Arsene Wenger was sacked. Arsene Wenger admits he was sacked. No, he said this wasn't his decision. And I think this is just typically what happens. And we see this all the time with headlines, especially with British journalists and the press over there and clickbait. We get the whole transcripts, right? We get the pressers, and typically they come to us at the end of the day, and a lot of times I'll go listen to the whole presser, and I'll see how they've twisted things, you know, or see the question actually led someone down that path. What's interesting here is there was no follow-up question to that. It came towards the end of the presser, and everyone sort of was satisfied with his answer in the room because, in my opinion, when you see his body language and you see that no one jumped on that quote, basically everyone thought, oh, he just means the timing of the announcement. He's saying, you know, the timing of the announcement was out of my control. And I think that's what he means. I think he means, listen, the reason we're announcing this right before a big Europa League first leg match against Atletico Madrid is because that's what the club wanted to do. Now, if you unpack that further, yeah, the club needs to do that because they don't want it to come out that they've met with another manager. You know, they've met with you know, the short list of people they're thinking of, you know, Allegri and Yogi Love and some of the names that you've seen thrown out. They need to start talking to these people. I mean, there's a World Cup this summer. If they want to lock down, and when I say they, now we're talking about, you know, Raul Senhi, I don't know how to pronounce it, the director of football who's at Barcelona for about 9 years, who's not necessarily like a recruitment identification guy. He's a deal closing guy. He got the Neymar deal done, that monster deal that sent him to PSG. He's been brought in to be the director of football. Mislintat is the ex-Borussia Dortmund guy who's there more as recruitment. They're going to be big central in this decision. Ivan Gazidis will be central in this decision. Arsene Wenger will probably have an opinion but not an influence. He actually was asked about Luis Enrique because obviously playing Atletico Madrid, there was Spanish press there. Mm-hmm. They wanted to know his thoughts about Enrique. And his answer was, well, I don't want to influence the decision. But yeah, I mean, he's a great manager. So the reason the announcement comes out now is they have to get to work on that. So I think that's what Arsene Wenger meant. And everyone's kind of blown it out of proportion to make it seem like he meant, yeah, I was fired. Now, that being said, I think he was fired. I mean, I think finally Stan Kroenke, who has always held the aces, who's the one who makes this decision and typically deferred to Arsene, who in these board meetings, Arsene was there, present, when they were discussing his future. Stan Kroenke has basically in the past said, Arsene Wenger's good for business, 20 years of Champions League, you know, the bottom line's great, and he's right. I mean, Arsene Wenger was stability, he was trophies every now and then, he was Champions League, sponsorship, business is going great. For the first time ever, now they're not delivering Champions League. You know, sponsorship and stuff becomes more difficult when you're not winning trophies or in that competition. And they can see that the performances are heading in the opposite direction, even as they bring in great players like Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang and are starting to really build a good side. So finally, I think Josh Kroenke, Stan Kroenke's son, is over there observing. They're kind of taking the power back. And I think Stan Kroenke acquiesced and said, listen, all right, I'll let everyone be involved because the boardroom had been battling for some time about moving on past the Arsene Wenger era and building something new. I think finally Kroenke said, all right, you know, I'll go with the consensus here. And the consensus was time to move on. And they basically told Arsene, we're going to be moving on this summer. We'd love for you to just agree to that. And I bet Arsene Wenger fought and said, listen, you know, let me see it out. Let me see. I'm sure he didn't want to leave because he loves the club so much. He still believes, and this is kind of his delusion at this point, that he can get the best out of this group and that they're not headed in the wrong direction. So there was probably a back and forth that ended with Arsene Wenger saying, okay, I understand. So he basically was told, like, let's make this look good and let's give you one last final stretch where we can celebrate you. And move on. You know, I wish they would have done it after an FA Cup win a couple seasons ago, you know, and done it then. That would have been perfect. But this is the right thing. This is the right thing for Arsenal Football Club, and they're going to move forward. And the big question is going to be, who's the next guy in the summer? Because even though you're taking over after a rough patch, as opposed to taking over after Sir Alex Ferguson when he wins the title, you know, it's still big shoes to fill. So exciting stuff going on at Arsenal Football Club, and I'm sure we'll get maybe right before the World Cup an announcement on who takes that club forward. Let's move on to Liverpool. Incredible. I was there a couple weeks ago at Anfield watching them play Bournemouth, and there was a big discussion about how would they set up for that game knowing they had a huge first leg against Roma coming up. And Jurgen Klopp brought out his first team, and at the stadium was with Derek Ray, who I really enjoyed calling the game with. We said, and the guys that were doing the studio pitch side, they were at Wembley because they were doing the Manchester City Spurs game. So the Robbie said, and I said, we all said, great to see Jurgen Klopp putting out his first team and taking the league seriously. continuing the momentum of the great performance against Manchester City and just rolling on. And what we saw in the first leg at Anfield against Roma is this Liverpool team is special. I mean, there's nothing fluke about this season. What they did to Manchester City and getting over that hurdle, what they're doing in the league, and what they're now accomplishing with their European nights at Anfield and in the big Champions League competition that everyone wants to not only be in but to go far in, and English clubs have struggled to do that recently. Liverpool just look irresistible. I mean, it was incredible to see how they tore through a Roma side who actually started that game really brightly. You know, the first 15 minutes, I thought to myself, you know, this is dangerous, because there was a timidity about Liverpool that was unrecognizable. I mean, they did start a bit flat. And I was thinking to myself, they're so terrified of the away goal. And they're playing more conservative than they tend to at Anfield. And the fans were really trying to get behind them, to build them up and get them to, you know, to be who they are in front of the Kop and in that incredible historic stadium. And they just weren't really getting there right at the beginning of that game. Also knowing how difficult it is to score against Roma at the Stadio Olimpico. I mean, they haven't conceded a Champions League goal there yet. There was just it was scared. It felt scared. And then finally, after a couple of moments where Roma looked like they were going to break through, Liverpool just came alive. And it started with a few direct balls over the top. Roma were playing a back three, which shouldn't have surprised anyone. It surprised Barcelona when they played it in the second leg, because they're a 4-3-3 team. They never play a back three. But they used it against Roma in the against Barcelona in the second leg. They used it against, what was it, Lazio in the league. So it was clear that they were preparing it to bring it out against Liverpool, and it was just, it was useless. I mean, they played right through it. And on a night where you knew they had to run the score up a little bit, I mean, they shipped five goals. I mean, just absolutely crushed Roma, putting five away in the style that we've enjoyed all season long. I mean, Salah continues to be, honestly, the best player in the world right now. I mean, you always put Messi in his own category, because he's done it over so many years. There's something incredibly special about him. You're so hesitant to compare anyone to him. But if you just started watching soccer this year, but did it with, like, the eye of someone who's watched it for a long time, I mean, you have the analytical qualities of someone that understands the game and the nuance and can really dissect it, you'd say these players are similar. I mean, you say, yeah, Mo Salah, Messi, same kind of thing. I mean, Mo Salah has to be a front runner for the Ballon d'Or with what he's doing with Liverpool right now. And just top to bottom, the performance was excellent. I mean, I continue to be so impressed with Trent Alexander-Arnold. I mean, this young kid playing against Manchester City, going against Sané, who was a short list for PFA Player of the Year, the Young Player of the Year, and you know, shut him down. Now, you know, going against Roma, and he's going to start at the Stadio Olimpico. I mean, he could be playing in a Champions League final. I mean, he's going to be if he keeps playing like this, against maybe, you know, going up against Cristiano Ronaldo or you know, Ribery, or, I mean, whoever. I mean, it's just incredible what this kid's doing. And, you know, the only negative, a couple of them, obviously conceding two goals. You know, I kind of likened it to the Spurs-Juve performance, where Spurs just dominated Juventus, but when Juve switched on, you know, scored on their only attempts on goal. You know, Roma weren't dangerous through an hour, but then finally towards the end came alive. And those two goals, so now it's the goal differential that they were able to come back against Barcelona. I mean, can they do it again? I don't think so. I mean, I think Liverpool is in a Champions League final, and it's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, they really, I mean, obviously the two goals is a huge disappointment, but also they probably should have had eight or nine goals. I mean, Mane had a couple chances there in the first half before Salah finally scored, and that's why it was sort of interesting watching that first half. It's kind of like Salah's like, all right, I'm going to help set Mane up a couple times, and he wasn't getting it done. And then he's like, you know what, I'm going to knock one in from just, you know, cutting some on my left foot and rip it right in the upper corner. And then he just did the little dink on the second one. It's kind of like, you know, I know these other guys can play too, but I guess I'm going to have to take over here. And once he did that, it really just, it carried over into the second half, and they just, they were just dominant until that final 10 minutes, really, where they let Roma back in. But
totally. I mean, the only other negative, again, you know, the conceding the goals and then Oxlade-Chamberlain. I just feel so bad for him. This, just enjoying some of the best form of his career, playing in the center of midfield, a position he's always longed to play and didn't get his opportunities at Arsenal, a World Cup right around the corner. It looks like being stretched off the field in comments afterwards, that's it for the World Cup for him, which is just awful. I mean, obviously, Liverpool, it's a big blow for them, but for England, that's a lot of injuries that, that are racking up in that midfield position, and that's a big loss for them, how good he's playing right now.
Do you think with the midfield, I mean, it is a big loss. Jorginho Wijnaldum came in, did pretty well coming in, and he's done well for the most part while he's been with Liverpool. It looks like the Liverpool three, if he's out, if Ox is out for an extended period of time, would be Henderson, Milner, and Wijnaldum.
And Wijnaldum, yeah.
You already talked about the back line looking better. Is that the one area of weakness, or do you think that could be a pretty good?
Well, that's probably their. That was going to be their approach in the second leg, I think. I with the goal differential that they have, I think they were going to go with a more balanced and pragmatic midfield, and I think Wijnaldum offers a bit more defensive stability than Ox adds. I mean, it's a big loss because I think Ox is a part of their best lineup. I mean, I think the way they started this game is the best they have. And, you know, they're going to make it to a Champions League final, and missing Ox is a huge miss for them. So that stinks. But I felt it when I was at Anfield. There's a wave of optimism, this nostalgic belief in special nights and special European nights. You sensed it. And before the game, walking outside, people going up to the Shankly Gate and taking pictures and you know, the songs and the energy. I mean, Anfield always buzzes. I mean, it's always incredible. You get chills when you hear You Never Walk Alone every single time you go. It doesn't matter where they are in the league table. It doesn't matter what competitions they're in. When you go to Anfield, it's a special experience, but it was more than that this time. And I think it's because the Liverpool fans believe, although they won't say it out loud, they can win the Champions League. And I'll say it out loud. Liverpool are going to win the Champions League. I really do think this Liverpool side can get over that final hurdle. It's going to be against the most experienced team you would ever face in a final. I mean, it's going to be against either Bayern Munich or Real Madrid, and those two teams know a Champions League final. And by the way, big-time producers. I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo, there's no better Champions League player than him. But I honestly think the balance of this team, the progression, the belief, and Mo Salah gives them an opportunity that they're going to capitalize on. And I think they're going to, more so than that incredible comeback at Istanbul that stands as one of the greatest moments in Liverpool football history, with a team that probably on the day not as good as their opposition and didn't look like they should win that game. That was more what made that incredible and special, was winning something that no one believed they could. I believe this Liverpool side can win this Champions League final, and I believe they're going to do it.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, Bayern Munich, they've been coasting in the Bundesliga. They haven't really been challenged much this whole season. And Real Madrid, they've shown a lot of weaknesses. I mean, they almost blew the 3-0 lead against Juventus. So defensively, they've had some issues. I mean, Barcelona are going to win the league by a ton, and that's because Real Madrid has struggled a lot this season. So you see the weaknesses, even though these are juggernauts in Europe, you see the weaknesses in those two teams, and you feel Liverpool can exploit them, especially with that front three, which I'm curious, you know, maybe except since a few years ago with Neymar, Messi, and Suarez when they won in 2015. I mean, have you seen a front three play this well together?
No. Since that's the one I think of.
I mean, it's hard to picture. I mean, some of those other Barcelona teams when they had Henry and Eto and Messi were pretty good too. And Villa and Pedro and Messi the other time. But
I mean, the Manchester City one is a different version, right? I mean, the Aguero or Gabriel Jesus, Sterling Sané, it's effective, but it's more because of what's behind them. The De Bruyne, Silva, you know, double playmaker engine. This is a trio of players that individually are impossible to contain. I mean, Roberto Firmino, you know, has kind of flown under the radar, and I said inconspicuously the center of almost everything they do. And I saw it when I was at Anfield, and I watched him live when you could see him off the camera and notice things that you can't see when you're at home watching. It's the most selfless front three where the sum of their parts is remarkable. I mean, the tally of goals and assists, but individually, they all do so much and do so much in a different way. I mean, they all bring a different quality, but individually win their matchups constantly. And Roma, I mean, they're not, Liverpool are not going to face a more difficult team to break down than Roma in this Champions League. I mean, they're going to face attacking juggernauts and very experienced, powerful, well-built teams. But they just proved that they can break down the best defensive unit left in Champions League. So I just think it's going to happen. And, like, the excitement about the history in Liverpool, the last time it boiled up, I feel like, to this extent, was Brendan Rodgers' penultimate season. The big run, Gerrard slip, the we go again, the belief that they were going to win the title. And we all believed it. I mean, everyone got swept up in that. And in a way, I feel like Liverpool fans felt a bit exposed, where, you know, it's almost better when they accept that the successful history it's not going to be stirred up. I mean, you're not going to awake that beautiful ancient and historic past. But Klopp has pushed that back from the moment he's been there, and I just get the sense that again, it's coming alive. They're believing that this is a special Liverpool side that can add to an incredible history. I can't wait for that final. I mean, I hope this isn't a ridiculous comeback like we saw with Roma, although that would create another incredible story. Mm-hmm. And I have a soft spot for Roma, marrying a Roman and being a dual citizen and having my Italian citizenship and loving Totti and following him while he was there. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing Roma in the final, but I think it's Liverpool's time. All right, let's get on to Spurs, which, I mean, just the opposite of the positivity you feel about Liverpool is where you're left with Spurs being knocked out of the FA Cup. Both of these teams, I honestly think, are having the most impressive seasons outside of Manchester City. I mean, everyone wants to just look at points and just wants numbers to tell them what they can't figure out by just observing. The movement, the progression, the project that is Liverpool, that is Spurs under these two managers, it's pretty remarkable where they've taken these two sides. I mean, they are so much better than what these managers inherited. They are aggressive, they press, they attack, they're entertaining, they're free-flowing, they use youth. I mean, there's a lot of similar qualities. The fact remains for both Liverpool and Spurs, they can't get over that last hurdle. I mean, Klopp has gotten Liverpool to some finals and can't, get the business done. But Klopp's won trophies. So, I mean, that's where this big thing comes down, where it's less about Spurs and looking at all the semifinals that they've been knocked out of, or recently all the competitions where they've been great but haven't been able to get over hurdles. For me, it's less about that and more about Pochettino. I mean, he right now is being thought of as one of the best managers in the world. He's being linked with the biggest clubs in the world. And that almost never happens when you haven't won anything. So at some point, Pochettino has to prove that he can get a team that is playing good enough, that has the quality and has the consistency to win trophies. He has to prove that he can do that with this side. And so, that's interesting, and you look at who did it to him, right? You look at it was Jose Mourinho, and many think that Jose Mourinho is kind of heading, like, he's another era, right? I mean, a lot of people want to make the argument that Pochettino and Klopp, they represent this new modern era of managers, and Jose Mourinho's, passed it a bit. And Jose Mourinho just gave a big reminder of why he's still one of the greatest managers out there, because he just gets those games done. I mean, forget what it looks like. I mean, not relevant to this conversation. When it comes to being a great manager, you have to get over those hurdles. I mean, one of the reasons Pep Guardiola is lauded and respected, and people lionize him is because not only does he do it in that aesthetically pleasing way, but he wins that way. He wins trophies that way. So Pochettino, I mean, he has to at some point, get this team over the line. So that's a big knock on them.
So what do you think has to change, though? Is it something tactically where he reels it in a little bit like Mourinho does? Or do they need to – is there something with the squad they need to improve? You know, there's that story came out a few weeks ago. They had a £306 million revenue. Do they have the money now where they need to go and bring in big-name players instead of selling big-name players like they have in the past? I mean, I guess is it a little bit of both? Does Pochettino need to adapt a little bit in some ways, or is it the players?
No, I mean, for me, I don't think you need to change the approach much. I mean, being conservative, they weren't really as aggressive in that game as they've been in the past. I mean, Manchester United actually started that game pressing and being the aggravators and trying to keep the tempo high. I was actually pretty surprised at how Manchester United started that game. I mean, don't forget, it was Spurs that actually scored on the counter and hadn't created anything or really established any possession up to that point. You know, what's funny about Manchester United fans, right, is they'll say, we're not in the title race, right? We're miles off from Manchester City because of all the money they've spent. But then they'll look at getting past Spurs and the FA Cup and say, it's because of our manager. You know, it's because our manager's better. You know what I mean? Forgetting the fact that the guys that scored the equalizer, a combined value of around £140 million to bring both of those guys in, a record for Pogba, and the value of Mkhitaryan plus, you know, the January value of Sanchez. Mm-hmm. I mean, money talks, right? So, I mean, it's just fascinating that that's an arrow that's used when it's convenient, and then people forget that it's more than just money. So it's not really about Pochettino going and spending a ton of money and Daniel Levy letting him do that. But when I watched that game, I saw their typical game changers not really show up. I mean, Dembele had an off game at a really bad moment. Dembele, one of their best players, honestly, I think first three names on the team sheet, he's one of them. Got dispossessed by Pogba, which never happens to lead to that equalizer where Pogba chips it in for or curls it in for Alexis. Harry Kane's not okay. The way he was moving, I mean, just lacked service into him, which isn't his fault, but he just doesn't, that ankle injury doesn't look quite right. I was watching him off the ball, the way he was moving, he just doesn't really look all that explosive or comfortable, and, you know, just really struggled to have an impact in that game. Dele Alli struggled to have an impact in that game, save for obviously scoring the first goal. I mean, he really just couldn't find his way to influence the match. And because Dembele was struggling and not being able to transition them into the attack, Eriksen was dropping deeper and deeper. So I think that game was missing like one real quality player that either from the start or off the bench could come and totally change things. I mean, Lucas Moura, I mean, I love him. He's talented. But, you know, Spurs need to go shop in the Manchester City, Manchester United, you know, store for a complete game changer. I mean, they have to do that at some point. I mean, that tends to be one piece that can add to something that's there, that's primed and ready to win things. Now, the other part is Pochettino. I mean, at some point you have to be critical of his team's mentality, especially in the Juventus game when they're dominating. They're going to get past Juventus. They're going to stay in the Champions League. I mean, they're right there. And it's just lapses. I mean, some of that stuff you have to look at Pochettino and just wonder, is this team tactically set up to be able to just alter in those moments, like Jose Mourinho does better than anyone, just to ensure you're going to get by, ensure that you mitigate risks so that you get through over the next hurdle and into the next phase or lift that trophy. So, you know, I do worry a bit about Spurs when I think about the fact that it's a title race that they fell out of a few seasons ago. Now it's, you know, FA Cups are falling out of, Champions League they're falling out of, and the quality of the team and the progression is there to tell you that they shouldn't be. And they tell you that they should be able to win titles and they should be able to do all this stuff. So, yeah, I mean, they're definitely question marks for Pochettino, as great as he is, and I think he's absolutely fantastic. There's definitely question marks.
What do you make of the way he's handled the situations with Kyle Walker? He's left, but we started to see that relationship break down last season. Now Alderweireld and Danny Rose. So imagine if you had those three starting, and that's a disrespect, you know, Davinson Sanchez, Ben Davies, or Kieran Trippier. Yeah. But you would think that if you put those three in for those three, if you have Alderweireld, Walker, and Rose, probably a little bit stronger back line than what you have there. And I guess it's just I respect the reasoning for it. It's kind of, you know, no one's bigger than the club, and when you start kind of flirting with other offers from other clubs. Mm-hmm. It becomes a distraction to the rest of the team. But does there need to be some sort of compromise when situations like that happen? You look at Liverpool, for example. They would play Coutinho even though there were issues. It was clear he was probably going to leave. Klopp still worked him in and would play him, and he did help them in the first half of the season, even though you can argue now they might be better without him. But I just wonder, is he being a little too strong with some of these strong personalities? Does he need to maybe reevaluate his handling of these players?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I don't think so, because I think that it's because he's a project manager instead of a short-term manager. I mean, he doesn't come in and say, win the title at all costs and leave the problems for the next guy. I mean, he does think about the longevity of what he's building, and getting bad personalities out is part of it. I mean, as good as they are, I mean, the decision to get Walker out and now bring Trippier into the fold, you could easily argue with how good Walker has been with Manchester City, it was a bad decision. But I think those are good decisions, especially when Trippier starts to perform in the way he's performing, where I can't really isolate one area where, man, if they had that player, it'd be different, because you'll take a lower quality player in certain categories just to make sure that the harmony of the team and the unit and the sum of the parts are greater than just making sure you have one talented player who becomes an issue. I mean, it speaks more to the wage structure issue that they're definitely going to have. I mean, these players keep leaving and doubling their wages. You know, I just mentioned Alexis. You know, it's not only the money spent. Like, I mean, Manchester United getting past Spurs is surprising to us, because most of us feel that Spurs actually play better and are a better team than Manchester United. As good as Jose is in those one-off scenarios, and there's maybe no manager better or a few managers better than Jose in a knockout competition, big game scenario, you know, Manchester United spent on those two players what Spurs net have spent over the past 5 years. So, yeah, the market you need to spend, but also Alexis's wages are like £300,000-£350,000 a week. So at some point, you know, Pochettino can look up to Levy, kind of like Antonio Conte is now with his board, and saying, you know, this is only going to be as good as the tools you give me. Now, he's got a lot of great tools, and many he developed himself and sharpened himself. But they're moving into a new stadium. If they really have aspirations to get over the last hurdle and win trophies, you know, Pochettino aside, for his career and for his progression and for the profile that he has, winning trophies being commensurate with how he is respected and how good he is, aside from that, this team needs to start winning things, right? Or else you're not going to be able to keep a lot of these players. I mean, a lot of players do want to win trophies and will love playing in the new stadium. And the way you do it is you have to pay them, you know, salaries that are close to what they can get at big clubs that play in great stadiums and win trophies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's an interesting time. I think it's definitely a blow to the Pochettino project, for sure. It also worried me that he didn't really focus on, talk kind of the psychology, he wasn't demanding of his team winning that competition and saying, we're going to win the FA Cup, we're going to focus on it, we're in a comfortable position in the league, our focus is to go and win this FA Cup. I never really heard him say that out loud. So, like, you know, I do think that you can kind of nitpick and find this psychological deficiency where he demands so much. We just explained it. He demands so much of players in terms of commitment and attitude. I just wish he would have gone out and made a huge public, you know, proclamation that we will win the FA Cup.
It's funny, if anything, he's gone the opposite route. I just saw a recent quote where he said, maybe next season we play the FA Cup with kids. So he's basically saying, who cares about the FA Cup? If we play the kids, no one's going to criticize us because they wouldn't expect us to win. So he's
that's not the best thing
to say right after you get eliminated.
No. You have to say, if you're Pochettino, listen, we're a big club. We deserve to be winning things. We should be winning things. And, I take responsibility for the fact that we fell short this time because we're good enough to win the FA Cup, and we'll win it. We will win it next year. I mean, next year I will deliver a trophy for this team. If I don't, then I will take the criticism. And if that means I've got to go, I've got to. I mean, I want him to really say what we all see. We all see a team primed to win things. And if he goes out definitively like that, really strong, and says, I want to win, And next year, if we don't win something, if we don't win a major trophy, I'll walk away. Like, I'll, you know, of course, Daniel Levy doesn't want him to walk away, and most of the players don't want him to walk away. But you know what he's done? He's put the pressure now on Daniel Levy to say, you want to keep me, give me the players, give me the money, let me buy two really big pieces, and next year we do it. So, yeah, I was just left. I was, you know, I had tweeted out it'd be really interesting if Jose Mourinho in his second season with Manchester United goes trophyless, which is incredibly rare for him, and Pochettino ensures that by getting by him and wins his first trophy. I just thought that would kind of play to that narrative of the passing of the baton, the new era stuff. But Jose Mourinho says, you know, I'm not going anywhere. And by the way, you don't have to like me, and you don't, and I don't. I don't like the style, and I don't like his bravado and, you know, some of his behavior to medical staff or journalists or players. But I don't have to like him to say, what an incredible manager. And he's basically reminding everyone, you know, this old dog doesn't need to learn new tricks. My old tricks still work just fine. Thank you very much. So we'll see if he can get by his old club. In the FA Cup final. It's going to be after the season, so we're going to be off the clock enjoying that one, although I'm sure we'll have our say before the season is done. And, we've got the final stretch here. We've got some good games this weekend where it seems the relegation battle is going to be where the drama's left. And then we'll see how Arsenal get on. Can Arsene Wenger finish off his incredible Arsenal career? Until then, guys.